looked at all the instructional objectives that were handed in, I saw that about 50%, what would you like to do?
Just don't turn to number 5. Please, if it's turned to recording, it's in number 5.
Aha. It seems like 50%, I would say, of the devotees who handed in the sheets understand it extremely well. And the others understand an explicit instructional objective partially. Now, performance, criteria, and conditions, they're all just a part. Those are the different parts of the instructional objective. If you write an instructional objective, one should be able to analyze within that one or two sentences, within that one should understand, be able to see the performance. It's not that the performance, the criteria, and the conditions is separate from the instructional objective. The instructional objective can be analyzed. It should include those three elements, right? But remember, most importantly, and some devotees didn't quite get this, or that they may have understood it, but it wasn't reflected in what they wrote, that the instructional objective tells what the teacher expects the students to be able to do at the end of the lesson, to show that the student has learned what the teacher has taught. I'll repeat it one more time. That the instructional objective shows or tells what the student will be expected to do at the end of the lesson. And what he does at the end of the lesson, does, this is the key word, what he's able to do at the end of the lesson, that will demonstrate to the teacher that the student has learned what the teacher has taught. So it has to be do something. Some students wrote, still were writing, the student will know something. When they were writing their instructional objective, they will know or they will learn. But that is implicit. You cannot see just by looking whether someone has learned something or knows something. But if you ask them in some way to demonstrate that they know or have learned something in some way or another, by writing it, by speaking it, by showing it, by jumping up and down so many times, somehow or another, demonstrating it so it's observable, then it becomes explicit. So again, an explicit instructional objective allows the teacher to see that the student has learned what that teacher has taught within the lesson. It has to be observable, or else it's not explicit. Now, of course, everything that we are meant to learn in Krishna consciousness is not explicit. Life isn't that simple. But for instance, if you're out on Sankirtan, and someone is saying that I feel humble and Sankirtan, when I'm telling people to chant the holy names and ask them if they will take one of Prabhupada's books. So implicitly, by the end of the lesson, the student may feel humble, and then he goes out on Sankirtan. But what will be an explicit expression of his humility? What would be an explicit expression of the humility? Okay, raise your hand if you have an idea. Okay.
That he will be able to
beg a donation.
That what? He's able to ask a
donation. Okay, he will ask, he has the humility to ask, to beg for a donation from each person he meets. what would be another expression of the humility. So he's feeling humility inside. So that's implicit. So what is the explicit manifestation of the humility?
Question on.
Okay, but tolerate. Yes, I'm tolerating. What is the external manifestation of someone tolerating it? He continues. Yes, very good. He continues. It's tricky, this implicit, explicit. Another explicit manifestation of internal humility. Rota. Okay, he goes out, he continuously goes out. That means humility. What else? That shows, just like once I was in Prabhupada's room, and he said, I am getting these letters. My dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my most humble, worthless, fallen obeisances. I have a big problem. And Prabhupada just laughed. He said, just see, how could someone who is worthless and so fallen have a big problem? So there was the improper external manifestation that didn't match what he was claiming to have internally. Of course, if someone is feeling lower than the straw on the street, how could he have a big problem? I am the most fallen, lowest person, and someone kicks you and you get angry. That would be another one, another explicit manifestation of internal humility. That you asked so many people to chant Hare Krishna and you didn't become angry even once. Some person yelled at you. That's like when we used to chant, go on Harinam Sankirtan in the village. In the 60s, sometimes people would pour all kinds of liquids on our heads. Do they still do that?
Sometimes.
Beer and this and that. And the devotees are so blissful, we just continue. No anger, at least sometimes. But that would be another external, explicit manifestation of humility. So the teacher, he's teaching in so many different ways. His goal is to teach humility, right? So that's an educational objective. It's a long-range objective to teach humility. Humility is our siddha pranali. Trinadapi sanichena turodapi amanina manadena kirtanaya sadhari. This is the process of perfection, because with a humble heart, one can chant the holy names constantly. So the guru is always teaching humility. So how does he teach it? This is his educational objective, long-range objective, to teach humility. So there may be so many instructional objectives that he has. Today, I will send the disciple out. He may not write it out, but I will send my disciple out begging. And he should not get angry one time. So in the lecture in the morning, he preaches about humility and tolerance, and he tells the story of Haridas Thakur being beaten in the 21 marketplaces. And in this way, he lectures on humility. Then he sends out the student on an activity of begging. And then he comes back, how many times did you know, what happened this time? How did you react? Did you get angry? Were you tolerant? And this way he can see, because it's explicit, the anger is an explicit showing. This way he can see very clearly with his own eyes whether the student has mastered the lesson or not. So first, he has to decide what he is trying to accomplish, what he's trying to teach. And this is what a guru, a teacher, is thinking all the time. He's looking at his disciples. If they are fortunate, he's looking at them one by one and saying, what does this one need to learn? What does this one need to learn? Not just, what do I need to teach them? Because what I need to teach them is based on what they need to learn. So he's thinking, what does this one need to learn? What does this one need to learn? What does this one need to learn? And therefore he's in his mind, he's preparing lessons for each and every one to make sure that they're learning what they need to learn. And he's watching the explicitness of it, how they will express the failure or the success of their learning experience. So once the goals have been assigned, the educational objectives have been assigned, then the teacher has to be so expert, he knows how to break it down into so many progressive steps. He has to know what the disciple, or even if you're teaching math or Krishna consciousness, the guru must be so expert to know what is the next step that the student needs. And then he has to know how to teach him that step, and he focuses his mind on it, and he gives the student or disciple a lesson taught in so many different possible different ways to help him learn what he wishes to teach them. The teaching is the teacher's job, the learning is the student's job. So there are so many different methods or procedures that the teacher will use to teach. We talked about lecturing yesterday, you read about lecturing. Today, we mentioned in the reading assignment, all those who have read the reading assignment, raise your hand, who have completed it. Oh, very good, thank you. Except for some who didn't read. Sometimes teachers will ask you a question, has everyone read the reading assignment? Okay, has everyone read the reading assignment? And what happens? Everyone becomes confused, maybe, because no one knows if everyone has read the reading assignment. So the tendency is to ask like that. You say, who has read the reading assignment? Who has not read it? Things like that. So there were... we mentioned today, in today's reading, we divided the procedures by which a teacher will teach. There are unlimited, actually, ways a teacher will teach. But we mentioned four. Lecturing, discussion. What are the other two that we mentioned? Raise your hand. Raise your hand, please. Pundarik, raise your hand. Oh yeah, raise your hand and then wait till I call on you. Not only raise your hand. Okay.
Role playing.
And? Activities, learning activities. No, role playing could be called an activity. But it's actually such a powerful one, I gave it its own title there. Also under activities, we have small group activities. We've used that because in a big group like this, when there's an important or controversial or deep subject matter to discuss, everyone wants to talk, but it's very difficult to carry on a discussion in such a large group. So if you break into a small group, everyone can have an opportunity to express their mind and to hear others and then get back to the bigger group. Debate is very, very, very useful. Tutoring is very useful. So many different activities, and like this, there are so many different ways to teach. So many unlimitedly different ways to teach. When Prabhupada, we were talking about in one of our teacher training classes about Gurukula, one of the teachers, one Mataji, who is an older, experienced Sankirtan devotee, was talking about how going out to distribute books, how it teaches you dependence on Krishna. Because she tended to be very shy, not very outgoing, and then she would have to try to ask someone to take a book sincerely, and she found herself having to pray and pray and pray and pray to Krishna to help this soul. How wonderful! Chaitasasava kamani maya sanyasya matpara Buddhiyogam upashita matchita satatam bhava. And all activities and for their results just depend on me and work under my protection. And such devotional service be fully conscious on me. So every devotee who's taken a risk for Krishna, who has gone in on the order of Guru, gone and done something difficult, if he's doing it properly, he's learning from this activity, if nothing else, how to depend on Krishna. Every Sankirtan devotee, every devotee who has preached in the Orient, like that, in different places, there's so many stories, everyone can say so many stories, or preach anywhere. In the early days, that was the whole mood. Prabhupada would say, go and open a temple somewhere. So devotees would just go on the order of Prabhupada and practically be there with nothing. This is a learning activity. You'd be there nothing except your faith in Guru and Gauranga. Practically speaking, it was impossible for this movement to spread the way it did in the early days. Young people with no experience, but because of that faith in Krishna, the devotees just went out. Practically, sometimes they'd be in a foreign country, knowing no one, with not one penny. Practically speaking. And then just going there in that activity, the guru wants you to, what does he want? He wants the spreading of Krishna consciousness. He wants you to preach and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But he wants you to become Krishna conscious. He wants you to become Krishna conscious. So the order is meant to make you Krishna conscious too. So there, you're there all alone. You're thinking, who can help me? And you just begin praying to Krishna, and Krishna always helps. And this way we learn. So many different activities to teach us. So, why don't we have some presentations now? Who are the devotees who we asked yesterday to have 2-minute lectures? Okay, and also for homework today, for tomorrow, they'll be reading. Read the next section. Read the next section on set, closure, and evaluation. Read set, closure, and evaluation. It ends on page 43. Now everyone turn to 43 in your book. Now in 43 in my book, somehow or another, page 13 was written. And on the other side of page 13, which should have been 43, 44 is there. Am I the only one who has a page 13 between 42 and 44?
No, I have.
Okay, raise your hand if you have that. There was another question like that. Am I the only one? No, no one knows this, if I'm the only one. Okay, who has a page 13 where 43 should be? Okay. Now what I've done is I've gotten Buck DeBrett in the office to print me out a page and I just stapled it in, so you please do the same. You go ask him for a page 43. I think he's set up for that. So read up to page 43, Teach Your Liveliness. The next class, which will be on Monday, we'll do all the Teach Your Liveliness up to page 47. But for tomorrow, up to page 43, Teach Your Liveliness. Okay, tomorrow also, in addition to that, we'll try to have everyone make a 2-minute presentation, but it's obviously going to be difficult if we do it one by one. So we could either have everyone stand up and make their presentations together, or we could break into small groups, and then one after another we could make everyone can make a presentation, because I think we actually have access to the other room. So that will make it easier too. Because this art of teaching is not something that can be learned just theoretically. It takes practice. So we'll have learning activities of giving lessons, or they're, in some ways they're role playing. It's more learning activity than role playing. Okay, are there any questions right now? This one. Louder.
Say, for example, there is a student who understands implicitly, but when she cannot teach someone because the character condition, he cannot express explicitly what he has been told.
Well, the question is, what happens if a student has some implicit, understands implicitly, but can't express it explicitly? So the question is, how will the teacher know the student understands it implicitly? Because if I say, I know the Bhagavad Gita, do you know if I know it or not? Every verse in the Bhagavad Gita, you can't tell if it's implicit until there is some explicit expression of that. So that's the problem. If you think the student actually... Sometimes a student... This is subtle teaching, not on the sort of... We're dealing on a grosser level right now. But sometimes with a student, if you'll say the student is shy, and this goes for adults as well as... And they've learned something. They understand that they've made a mistake. And you ask them, do you understand? And they'll just go. And that's all you get. And that's just the way they do it. A teacher will be able to tell that they do have some understanding. But I'm not sure if that's what you meant. Well, give an example, that will make it easier for me. Okay, for instance, say we're teaching about explicit instructional objectives, and a student may understand it implicitly, but may not be able to demonstrate it, for example. See, but unless they can demonstrate it, the teacher won't know if they actually have an implicit understanding or they actually don't understand it. You follow me? So, just like so many people in India will say, I love Krishna, implicitly. But there has to be some external manifestation of it for us to believe them. Like Prabhupada, he dedicated his whole life to loving Krishna. So if you love someone, that would be the explicit. Not that the dedication, the explicit in itself, means that you love Krishna, because someone could be cheating and externally dedicating his life, but internally being after some subtle sense gratification. But if someone does love Krishna, this external manifestation will be there. Huh? Should try to find out a way that the student can externally manifest. Let's say the student would be too shy to stand up in front of the class and give a lecture. But in a small group, the student may not be so shy with the friends. Yeah, did you wait first? Did you?
You actually answered the question.
Pretty good, huh?
On page 15, you quoted Srila Prabhupada at the bottom of the page. The proof of your teaching method will be the spiritual improvement and fresh enthusiasm exhibited by the children. And I was wondering how a teacher could actually, you know, understand the spiritual improvement of the student.
Well, that's a bit of detail on that, but there's external manifestations of spiritual improvement that are obvious to everyone. But when you're preaching in China, how do you know if someone's making advancement?
They want to chant.
What else?
They come, they're anxious to perform service.
They give up eating snakes. So many things. Snake, rats, snake bile, cats. So many ways. So someone could say that I'm spiritually improving, but we want to see to see it in some external manifestation. They'll give money, naturally, because people are so attached to money. So they'll give money, they'll give their time. So with children, serious and chanting like that, looking at the deities, so many simple ways.
Explicit always has to be externally manifest.
Explicit means externally manifest.
So can there be some kind of in between, like the example about someone going on a sangraton and not and being humble? I mean, if they're inside, they're not they're very angry, but they're not yelling and screaming, they're just holding it in. Is that, that's implicit? I mean, it's not as subtle as like appreciation or something like that, but it's
so someone, humility. What we talked about, not just anger, but the continuity of it. So there has to be some actual manifestation of it, if it's real. Yes. So the fact that he's going out every day, despite how difficult, and that he is getting angry and he's holding it in, that's some humility even of itself. But if he says, I'm not doing it, I don't care what he tells me what to do, I'm humble, but I'm just not going to manifest it right now. Right, but right, holding in the anger, going it out for another reason. But somehow or another, then why is he doing it? Okay, there can be, but there should be. This is the teacher has to see these things, and generally, there will be, of sincerity, there will be some external manifestation in some time, in some way. You think so or not?
Wait, are you talking about sincerity?
Well, same, humility. There will be, naturally. He'll do what he's told. Because his shelter, his guru, is asking him to do this. And anyway, if someone is just doing it for an external manner, you may be able to fool some of the people some of the time, but you will not be able to. And if the guru is guru, he will not fool him. We shouldn't think. Someone told me a wonderful, wonderful story today about Prabhupada and Vrindavan that which shows us that we can't think because the guru may sometimes be allowing something to go on, and we may think that he's not seeing what's really going on. One time there was someone, a devotee, I think it was in Bombay actually, a devotee had done something, and he was obviously not acting properly, and they wanted to ask him to leave. And one of the leaders approached Prabhupada and said, we should ask him to leave. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, what does the person have to do before we ask him to leave? He's already acting so horribly. And Prabhupada said, oh yeah. Prabhupada said first, no, you don't understand the mercy of Lord Nityananda. When the devotee wanted to ask this person to leave. He said, well, and then he said, what does he have to do before we ask him before he runs out of mercy from Lord Nityananda? And Prabhupada's answer was, there's nothing he can do. So that little story is a little hard to apply for managers sometimes. But it's just meant to show us that a true spiritual master, he will see exactly where the disciple, his consciousness. It's not difficult. Krishna will allow him to see it. It's not difficult. But if someone is insincere, he'll be cheating in some way or another. You cannot fake pure devotional service. Like Prabhupada used to laugh when they were accusing the devotees or the early days in India of being CIA men. You know, they're going to Mangalarti, they're all day long chanting Hare Krishna, but they're CIA men. It can't be done. Unless you have this taste, it's like torture. Okay, we have to move on in the lesson a bit. Okay, so who is... Raise your hands again if... okay. Janardhan, and then Achyuta, and then what's your name, Kum?
Hasmur.
2 minutes though, okay?
I'll let you all stand in the corner.
Can I use your chair?
Can you use my chair? It depends what you're going to use it for.
I'm going to sit down, of course.
Yes,
sit down,
please.
Hare Krishna. So today I would like to discuss 3 reasons why Arjuna refused to fight in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. One of the main reasons is due to enjoying propensity. He's thinking about if he killed all of his kinsmen, his relatives, is that what is need for him to enjoy the kingdom? Just like an ordinary person who would always want to show off his opulences and riches to his relatives. So he's thinking about this. Next one is due to indecision. He doesn't know whether to fight or not to fight, or to get killed or kill the relatives. Because if he's going to kill relatives, he will be just be a mendicant going to the forest and beg for his living. Or if he's going to win, there's no sense of also having the kingdom by himself. And thirdly, because Arjuna is a saintly person, he doesn't want to fight. Being a saintly person, he doesn't want to create violence. It's only natural for a saintly person to be a non-violent. So he doesn't want to do this. He gave these 3 reasons to Krishna. And tomorrow, actually, we're going to be discussing two more reasons why Arjuna refused to fight. And in the third day, hopefully everyone will be able to get all the 5 main reasons. We're gonna have a little bit of a quiz just to check out if you know all of these reasons why
Arjuna
refused to fight.
Okay, that's 2 minutes. Thank
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Now wait. What was the objective?
As I mentioned, I would like to discuss 3 reasons why.
Okay, explicit instructional objective.
Yeah.
At the end of the, see, it's easy. If you want to help form your objectives, think it like this. At the end of this class or teaching episode, my students are going to be able to do the following. If you start like that, then it's very, very easy. Confirmed. Okay, at the end of this class, I wanted my students to be able to
learn 3 reasons.
Learn
3 reasons.
Learn, make it explicit. They'll be able to do the following. Okay, do the following. State 3 reasons why
Arjuna refused to fight.
Okay, why Arjuna. Now, how could we find out if you've been successful or not?
By a quiz.
Okay, you could ask them to state the 3 reasons either without looking at their notes, on a piece of paper or out loud. Okay, let's see. All those who could say 1 reason. Let's see if this. Okay, what was 1 reason? Krishna Kripa?
Sense enjoyment.
Okay, sense enjoyment. 2nd reason?
Indecision.
The 3rd? Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
Saintly character.
Okay. How many of you would have gotten 100% on the test of 3? Okay, see how valuable it is. Right? Because this is the sequence. You know what you're trying to teach, you teach it, and then you evaluate. Right? And then you could see how successful you've been. Say if 30% of the people actually know 3, then you have to think, how could I have taught it in a way that 100% of the people, so I may have written it on the board, 1, 2, 3, something like that can help. There are so many other ways. Emphasize it, sum it up at the end. We'll be talking about these things gradually more. But you did well. Very good. Thank you. Who was 2nd? Now, Are you ready at the end of the class to say at the end of this lesson, the students will be able to? No, okay, then you then
another, we're gonna have another way of presentation.
Huh?
My presentation was a little different.
Okay, but it should have an explicit instructional objective. Okay?
Okay,
we'll test you at the end.
Yeah. I hope it will not be too weak. Hare Krishna.
We'll speak loudly.
So I want to give my presentation in the form of a story. In Vedic times, there was a sage of the name Ashtavakra. Some of us might have heard of him. Ashta means eight, and his Ashtavakra, he was bent on eight parts of his body due to a curse of his father. And that made him look a little bit funny. So sometimes he was also object of ridicule of other people because of his bodily appearance. So, for example, you read Bhagavatam, there is some story or some mention in the purport about Ashtavakra Muni in the first canto of Bhagavatam, when in the final lila of Krishna, the Mausya lila, when Krishna left his planet, Arjuna was questioned. He came back to his family, and Yudhishthir, he was very in a very depressed mood. Yudhishthir was actually questioning him, what is the reason of his depression? So one of the answers he gave was that actually he had the task of protecting some of the wives of Lord Krishna, and he was not able to do so, and even overcome by some cowherd boys, some rude cowherd boys who kidnapped his queens of Lord Krishna. So one of the reasons was that in previous life, these queens laughed at this sage Ashtavakra Muni, and he was the one who gave them the boon that they would be able to become queens of the Lord, become wives of the Lord. And second was that actually, because of this laughter, they were cursed that this would happen to them. Another little story is that once Ashtavakra Muni came into... Okay, I'm trying to be very quick.
10 seconds.
He came into the assembly of Lok Sabha, of ministers, and King Janak was there. As he came in, everyone...
You can tell he's been in India a lot.
Everyone laughed. Everyone started laughing. So he started also laughing. And then Janakir Maharaj, he asked him, Why are you actually laughing? What is your reason for laughing? And he was saying that actually I'm laughing because you are such an exalted king and you're in the assembly of such low-class rascals. So now my objective, I want you to tell me what you have understood in this from this little story. What is the lesson we should learn from that?
Okay. So. Now you, at the end of this lesson, okay, we'll find out what you wanted them to learn, a lesson from these two stories.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what is the lesson that you have learned? Raise your hand. Okay, well, let's take it this way. How many of you, raise your hand if you feel you clearly learned lesson from these two stories? From both of them together, or just the first one? First one was easier.
Both was about the same reason.
Raise your hand if you learned a lesson from this story. Okay. Thank you. Okay, now you can ask what lesson.
See how
the evaluation gives the teacher so much information on how to proceed.
So, Prabhuji?
They should not be unlearned. Don't judge a man by all his clothing.
That is more what I wanted to say, that one should not judge by bodily appearances. Just like we know also Vyasadeva is a very ugly sage, but just like the sugar cane might be bent, but inside is rasa, is nectar, is sweet. So anyway, it was not so successful.
But
in transmitting.
But everyone who gives classes know that sometimes it doesn't work exactly. But there's no such thing as as failure ever, because if you learn something from it, it's very good. Now, the next step when something like this happens, then you have to start thinking of, now how could I improve it? Like that. How can I improve it so the students learn what I wish, what I'm teaching? So this is, it's an art. The art of storytelling we'll cover a little bit later on. Thank you very much. Who is next? Well, I think we'll have only time for one more right now, actually. Yeah, also Norwood.
Hare Krishna. Well, I can't get through to half the people already. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Shri Prabhupada. The lesson I would rather discuss with everyone is what I have learned myself, which is that in the Nectar of Instructions, Srila Rupa Goswami, translated by Srila Prabhupada, explains Utsahan Nishchayad Dhairyat Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat. So knowing the meaning of the three words actually helps people in advancing in their Krishna consciousness. Now knowing the meaning of the three words is Utsahan Nishchayad and Dhairya. The English meanings, if anybody knows, it would help. Enthusiasm. confidence. And patience. I have found that the art of teaching is rather learning oneself. So this is what I have learned as a secret for myself, which is that every time I get into all sorts of problems while chanting or getting on with my Krishna consciousness, I remind myself of this particular shloka, which is Utsahan Nishchayad Dhairyat Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat. This is only half the shloka. But these three words are basically what keeps me going all the time, and I hope by everybody paying attention to these three words in their perseverance of Krishna consciousness, that it would do the same. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Thank you. Sit down in the hot seat. Now, what was your objective?
Wait. Before we do this.
Okay, what was the objective of your lesson?
The objective was to let everybody know at the end of the class that rather than wanting to teach somebody
at
something...
At the end of the class, I would the students should be able to do...
At the end of the class, the students should be able to recollect what was taught.
Now sit down. Now what would you want them to be able to do explicitly?
If they get into any kind of problems with their advancement in Krishna consciousness.
You're going for something very long-term and educational.
Right.
Which is very ambitious for a two-minute talk.
Right.
Which also was there. You planted those very nice seeds that were all very inspired to apply these things. But see, my guess was I thought at one point that you wanted us to know the Sanskrit and English meanings of these, but I think I was wrong. Was I right or was I wrong?
To a certain extent, you were right.
Okay. Now, what did you want the class to be able to do at the end of your presentation?
To remind themselves of the three ideas, Utsaha, Nishchay, and Dhairya, whenever there was a problem.
Okay. That is not an explicit instructional objective.
No. It is implicit.
It is implicit, yes. Because you cannot tell from this class how successful you were.
No, but again, I stress the point that learning is the essence of teaching. So
So if they have learned, then they will know. Rather than me knowing, I mean, they are their own teachers.
Wait a second. But then you won't know how successful you've been and whether they'll need some further instructions or not. See, the first, so you have to take things in steps. Okay.
Sit down.
See, before one can apply these three principles to his life, right, one has to know even mechanically what they are. So a first step, necessarily and practically speaking, to being able to, anytime there's any difficulty, to remember these three, is to, and which is probably more suitable for a 2-minute presentation, is they should know the Sanskrit and the English, right? And then that would be one lesson, 2 minutes. And you did pretty well in accomplishing that, I thought. And then if it was a 4-minute lesson, you could have, and you already did that too, put it as much as possible into everyone's heart, that any time there is a difficulty, you just remember these three and Krishna will protect you. So therefore you'd be lecturing and helping establish that. And then you'd send them out on Sankirtan like that, and then when they come back, you'd ask them how they did, and you could ask them, did you remember to be enthusiastic and patient? And in this way you would teach them. But you have to start with an explicit instructional objective that helps. You follow my point?
Yes.
Okay. See, it's difficult to think in these terms, but it helps. It is not that it is everything, but it helps to think in these terms. Now, what I would like you all to do is break up into some small groups. Now, how small they can be, we'll see. Now, there are differences. If everyone would turn to page 27. There are some stories on learning activities. That's one group. Then on page 30, there's tutoring as a learning activity. That's the second group. Then there is just group learning activities. That's the third group. Use of debate is the fourth group. Management of group activities is the fifth group. Increasing student involvement in learning activities is the sixth group, and a drawback of learning activities is the seventh group. What I'd like is we'll break into groups, these seven groups, and each of you will study, each group will study one of these areas, and then prepare a 2-minute presentation right here and now, and hopefully we'll have time to give that presentation. You'll teach the whole class each of these elements. We've all read it, and now, huh? The first one is just the general information on learning activities and the stories on page 27. There may be some redundancy. Okay?
So the topic is just general.
The topic is whatever is covered in there, or general. Now we just have to divide into the groups and make it clearer the reassignment. Now, if I understood how many people were in here, how many devotees were here, it would make it easier, but I don't know.
Seven people
for a group. Okay, there we go, okay. Okay, one group is two. Okay, one in this direction over here. Okay, that's 1, 2, 4, 6, okay? You can meet right over here. Second group, over here. 6, 8. You come into this group. You go into this group. And Mataji, 20, you divide into two groups, okay? Is that
tomorrow we'll have all the presentations except for one group is demanding that they present right this very second. And their next group activity is we're going to put them out on Sankirtan. Okay. So we'll have the presentations first thing tomorrow. Now everyone should come just exactly on time. Make sure that your group has an explicit instructional objective for its activity. That we, at the end of this two-minute presentation, the students will be able to do the following, whether it's explain a few points or write something down or whatever it is. They should be able have to be able to do something. Then it becomes very tangible. There are other devotees who have other two-minute presentations. Everyone has a two-minute presentation to get together with an explicit instructional objective. Everyone should be writing down different things they're learning about teaching as well. Little things, little tips for teachers that you're learning. What to do, what not to do. So all these things should be going on. Okay. Our two-minute presentation. Now, is it going to be exactly 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be Indian stretchable time?
One and a half minutes.
Okay, go. Enough talking.
Can you give us some space, please?
Now we're going to ask you about your explicit instructional objective. Watch your head when you stand up.
So we're going to explain role playing. And my role is that I've just taken second initiation from my Guru Maharaj, and I'm now going to go out and get some Guru Dakshi from my Guru Maharaj. And I'm supposed to have already learned what humility is, so I'm going to demonstrate what humility is. So, Hare Krishna.
I'm too busy now. Come back later. Come back later. I'm too busy now.
Hare Krishna, I'm getting some Guru Dakshi from my Guru Maharaj. Please play whatever you can. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna is the Krishna's man. Yeah. You come from somebody, take some. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. My name is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharyadas. I've just been initiated. Please offer some money, please.
Oh, dude.
So good. Hare Krishna.
Oh, a sadhu, a devotee of the Lord. Let me touch his arm. He's going to cut my material attachments. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Shastroy. Who would you like? Would you like to take my shop? You can take my shop. Everything is yours.
Oh, thank you. Push your master when you can. So, with this little sketch here.
By the end of this presentation, we want the student to be able to tell and reading in a quiz, each of the different modes of nature that each of the shopkeeper is on. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Now, I'm going to have to explain something a little more. That was more of a skit than role-playing. Now, role-playing is a little bit different, actually. But tomorrow we'll discuss that more.